Kevin. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors on 104.5 The Zone.
.803 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Go to fourseasonsgarages.com to learn more. Mark Howard along with Blaine Bishop, Kevin off this week, our producer Jonathan Schaefer. And this hour, of course, we're going to have Brent Hubbs talking UT football mainly, but a few other things with Brent. Wanted to pay off on the Mookie Betts story. It was brought up yesterday. This 60-game season, hopefully for us baseball fanatics, is about 2 weeks away. And, of course, there have been some stumbling blocks and the ever-present possibility that it just gets shut down before, during, or late in the season. And Mookie Betts needs another year of service, and then he's a free agent. And who knows what kind of contract he'll be in for. But with this possibility of, you know, maybe this season affecting his service time, he was asked if he had to do it all over again, would he accept the offer the Red Sox made to him this last offseason, 10 years, $300 million. And you think about, you know, what Bryce Harper got, what Gerrit Cole got, and Blaine, I understand why Mookie, you know, would say no. You know, I enjoyed my time in Boston, but 10 years, $300 million, he deserves to be, if not the top paid player in the game, he's got to be up towards that $40 million a year ceiling.
No doubt about it. I think what Trout got, what, $43 million? A year, yeah. If you want to look at the totality of the contract, yeah, he either should be right there with him or right underneath him. I think he would have probably accepted that, too, by the way. They gave him 10-year, $40 million, and that's, what, 2 or 3 years after Trout's deal. That was so that probably would be in the ballpark to probably start in probably his eyes. A lot of people would say he should be above, even though you would say Trout's the best player because it was 3 years later and that Trout's going to get another contract. By the way, to exceed that. So, yeah, he probably felt like that, as bad as that sounds, that that wasn't even in the ballpark. And probably at the time, he was MVP of the league, right? Or the, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's a tough call there. We all know Mookie. Mookie's a great player, great guy. But, you know, it's a business side to it, and he wants to get paid accordingly. And with the way the economics were going at the time, yeah, that definitely wasn't in the ballpark. To me, at that time, he had to at least get offered 35 to 38 to, let's say, yeah. Now we're negotiating in fairness to you and to the organization. And if you take a pay cut or a pay cut compared to where you think you should be, and what's fair, naturally, I think that would then put you in a ballpark between, you know, 35 and 40. Yeah, for having conversations to make you say, I should take this deal and not walk away. Right now, I don't think he would ever admit to, and I don't think he believes that he regrets that decision, though, at all. At $30 million, compared to someone who got MVP to the best player who had 40, was at 43 2 or 3 years before that, yeah, he can't take that deal.
Well, it's almost ridiculous, to be honest, yeah. And it sounds mm-hmm. – Yeah, it's like you said.
It sounds crazy.
But Mookie has earned the right to get what he's worth. And only Mike Trout, I believe, would be rated higher than him. Mike mm-hmm. Trout's won 3 MVPs. He's mm-hmm. Superman. But Mookie is a terrific player. I personally, if I'm Mookie, I'd probably want to play for the Cubs in that stadium. Mookie offensively would be unbelievable. You know, the Dodgers have the money to pay him. That might be ultimately where he goes, but he'll get paid. I'm not worried about Mookie Betts, and I don't think he's looking back. I don't think anybody could have anticipated, you know, a year ago that this was going to happen. So I don't know how you could second guess yourself. You know, it's not like we could all see it coming. So I think it's preposterous to even ask him if he's second guessing himself. But
to the point, the question, I like the question in that now that this pandemic has happened, you know, what will be the market next year when he becomes a free agent? Will he be able to get $40 million or more now? And that I don't know what the economy, but I don't know if he'll be able to get that now. I'm not sure. I don't know where baseball will be. And then you got the CBA up after the next year, correct? So that I don't know. He may have to wait another year to actually get what he wants. That'd be a tough call. Yeah, because where do you think he'll be able to get $40 million or more after this season, if there is a season? By the way,
it's a really good question. You know, he said opting out this year was not an option because he would have lost service time, and that's totally understandable. Listen, you know, to me, he's a guy who has played, you know, not with an eye on his paycheck. You know, he has often said that's off in the future. I'll deal with it when I have to deal with it, and he's gone out there. Plays the game hard, plays the game at an incredible level with a smile on his face. I wish him all the best. I hope that, you know, he's not a guy, you know, who ends up getting caught, you know, because, you know, the owners are suddenly, you know, holding back because of the financial hit they took this year. I think the owners are going to be all right, and you'd be crazy if you've got the cash not to go out and sign a guy like Mookie Betts, in my opinion. All right, let's talk real quickly about the NFLPA president, J.C. Treader, and the problem he has with the NFL. He feels like, and he's speaking you know, from the perspective of the NFL Players Association, Blaine, that there should not be any preseason games, that a lot of the training camp, an extended training camp, should be to be used for preventative measures against soft tissue injuries, Achilles tendon injuries, and things like that, because of what happened back in 2011 when there wasn't really much of a preseason or offseason and there were a lot of injuries. He feels like the NFL cares more about the two preseason games than they do maybe about the health of its players in that area.
Right. And, you know, he went public, and I don't know if you should or shouldn't. I wouldn't have done it if I'm in his position, but obviously they've been talking about it for a while, and if they got to this point, maybe they told him, oh, yeah, we'll be fine without going out with preseason game. Well, now the reality hits, and they go, no, you know what? We're going to have two preseason games. Because we talked to our TV guys, and they like, yep, you better have those two TV games. If not, there's going to be repercussions to it. Maybe it's something like that. So, man, I think if you have a committee that's put together that you've all agreed upon on both sides that you need 48 days to prevent injuries, as they saw from 2011 when they missed training camp, that this was going to be a huge issue. And we all discussed that before months ago, that this could become an issue with injuries, and how do you, I guess, handle when players come in and with a reduced roster if that happens for training camp. So now you're asking players to do more than normal. They haven't been around. They haven't been doing football activities, and you think the injuries aren't going to happen. We've seen them happen already in the offseason, guys working out on their own. So to his point, I completely agree with what he's saying. And if this circumstance tells us and dictates that we should have preseason games, then so be it. I'm sure we all would love to, and I'm sure the NFL, and I'm sure the players would love to get the kinks out of the way too as well. But if they haven't had enough practice time and they say 48 days is the day, then you can have the preseason game, then you must. But if 48 days goes by and then the preseason is over, you can't have them. I agree. So let's move forward and get – season going, if there's a regular season, everything goes according to plan. To me, this is a tip of the iceberg that everything is not going according to plan from the NFL's view. And now the NFLPA is saying, hey, hold up, you know, him being the leader there, that we can't do these preseason games because it's not enough time for our bodies to handle this, and we're asking for trouble with injuries is going to mount.
All right, straight ahead, we're going to speak to Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com, University of Tennessee issues, as well as college football. 8:12 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. .8:19 on the Wake Up Zone at 104.5 The Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Mark Howard along with Blaine Bishop. Kevin off this week, our producer Jonathan Schaefer. And we bring in one of our favorites. He's not just the publisher and the boss of VolQuest. He's running his empire on his farm, Brent Hubbs. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Looks like I'm doing the Blair Witch Project for you this morning. So hope I don't give anybody a headache on the video feed to you guys this morning. Hope everybody's doing well.
Yeah, when I get off the air, I watch Netflix or do something, you know, not exactly productive. Hubber runs his farm besides what he does with VolQuest. So that's why he has an empire.
Yeah.
Anyway.
An empire that needs football this fall.
It does, definitely. Brent, Charlie Daniels passed away a few days ago, the music legend. But he also had a pretty profound connection with the University of Tennessee. Talk about that. His relationship with Philip Fulmer was pretty close. He had a lot of associations there.
Well, he loved Tennessee football as a fan, first and foremost. And he, as an artist, you know, he would come to games and sit in the stands. You know, he didn't come to the game and say, "Hey, put me in the skybox." He would get in the stands. He had a son who went to Tennessee, and he got to know Coach Fulmer. They did a lot together through the Jason Foundation there in Nashville, which is a great organization in an effort to try to prevent teen suicide. And Charlie Daniels loved people. He loved Tennessee football. He loved his country. And he loved to play music. And sometimes you're not sure what order those were in, but those were the mainstays of his life. And, you know, because of that, he and Coach Fulmer had developed some friendships, and he enjoyed hanging out with people in the athletic department and talking to them, and he performed at Tennessee games. But, you know, he just loved Tennessee sports. He loved Tennessee football and was just a fantastic person.
Talking about the Vols, the Jay Graham show cause penalty, how does that affect his role at Tennessee?
I don't think it affects it in any way, shape, or form. I've been a little bit surprised the term show cause got used, to be honest with you, Bart, because when you think of the word show cause, it means you can't coach.
Yeah.
You're suspended from coaching. And that's the furthest thing from what's going on with Jay Graham. Jay Graham has recruiting restrictions on him, and the biggest is he can't go in a home in December. He can't make an in-home visit. I think he's going to be able to go out and evaluate on Friday nights, but he's not going to be making in-home visits in 3 weeks during the month of December, and that's going to be the extent of his punishment. And, you know, Jay has not come out and said anything. I think Jay's kind of disappointed in the way some of that was portrayed. Even from the release standpoint from Texas A&M, but that's part of the business, and Jay understands that, and I know Jay's trying to move on. Tennessee's fully aware of it. It does not affect him coaching at Tennessee in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, today we expect that the Ivy League will decide to play football in the spring. Do you think there's going to be a domino effect?
I think maybe some other conferences do that. I don't think it's going to have a domino effect right now on the Power Five. Now, if Power Five ends up doing something in the spring, I don't think anybody can come back and say, well, they're doing it because the Ivy League did it. But I think the Power Five's deal is that they're trying to slow play this thing as long as they can, see what it looks like day to day, see what it looks like week to week. And hold out for as long as they can, to the point that maybe they come back and say, hey, we're going to cancel, or we're going to push week one back, you know, or we're going to alter the calendar that way. They're going to do everything in the Power Five, Mark, that they can to keep football in the fall. There's real concerns from the Power Five standpoint about football in the spring because of other sports involved. And most importantly, how's the NFL going to adjust its calendar? If you're playing Power Five football in the spring, is the NFL going to say, hey, we're going to push the draft back, we're going to push the combine back? And then how many of those Power Five kids are going to play? Would Trey Smith play this year, or would he set out and get ready for the draft? Same for Trevor Lawrence. Same for Justin Fields, and we can go on and on and on. I think draft-eligible guys would have a very difficult decision to make because is it worth the risk right up on the heels of the combine and the draft to take a chance on an injury, okay? Because are you going? Where's your draft stock going to be if you've got a shoulder injury if you're a running back or an offensive lineman? So I just think that there's a lot of concerns and a lot of issues with it being in the spring that the Power Five does not want to go down that road if they can avoid it. At the same time, too, there's some non-Power Five, I guess the Group of Five conferences, who I'm told have had discussions about what spring would look like and have that much more of a contingency plan right now than maybe some of the Power Fives do. Now, maybe Power Fives have it. They just don't want to say that they have a contingency plan there. But I think Power Five is going to hold out for the fall as long as they can.
We're speaking to Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com.
Well, Brent, since we're talking about maybe not having the season or moving it to the spring, what kind of impact, I guess, money-wise, economically, will that have on UT and most universities where football is king?
Well, they got to play. And, I think that's why, even though nobody wants the spring option, if that's the only option, then somebody's going to make that option work because they've got to have the resources. They've got to have the finances to do that. To make the athletic departments, you know, function. Sports are just, you know, sports are handled by football in a lot of ways. The non-revenue sports are paid by football. So I just think that you've got to try to find a way to make it work. And again, nobody wants to do that in the spring, but at the same time too, you got to have a revenue stream coming in. If you don't have a revenue stream coming in, I don't know how you're going to function. How do you pay for these other sports when you're not making football money? Now, part of this goes back to particularly for the non-Power Five schools, hey, can I get some fans in the stands? Because the ticket revenue for those schools are very important because they don't have the TV deal with the SEC Network, and they don't have the TV payouts that some of the Power Five schools have. So fans in the stands for those schools are really, really important and going to be really significant. So lots of decisions, lots of discussions are having to take place over the next couple of weeks. Everybody's hoping that the sort of the worm turns in a positive way. But right now there's much more doubt than there's been since probably March or April regarding football.
Well, I guess in a good light, I guess Banks is back into the fold, or I guess kind of give the extent of where he's at, with UT, maybe with the university, and maybe not necessarily yet with the football team.
Well, he's back with the university. He's in school. Okay. This is all part of the plan. I'm going to go to summer school in the second session and online, and then is enrolled for the fall. And I think it's just a matter of time before he's back with the football program officially, but he's got to take care of business here the next few weeks. And I think Jeremy's done a good job. I think he's learned from what he's done. I'm not saying he's suddenly perfect. None of us are, but I think right. He has worked hard on his image, but more importantly, he's worked hard on his temperament and his attitude towards people and how he's dealt with people. He's done a lot in the community that nobody knows about. He's not bragged about it. He's not tried to use different platforms to show, hey, this is what I'm doing, look at this. He's just gone about his business that way. And I'll give Jeremy Pruitt a ton of credit for this. Not for getting him back as a football player, but, obviously that's part of it. That's why Jeremy Pruitt's doing this, because, he wants and needs Jeremy Pruitt on his team. But he's worried about Jeremy Banks as a human being and has spent a lot of time with him in conversation long before it was ever thought he might come back to school as a football player to ensure that that kid was going to have a chance at a successful future. Invested a ton of time in him personally helping him grow. And I think it's going to pay off for him.
Man, I know we've lost sight of it. If there is a season, and now that all this time has been missed, is JG just kind of, you know, the quarterback, Garantano, really, it's not going to even be a quarterback battle unless, you know, he does something horrible in games where he looks like he has improved with his second season with Chaney as offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to see anything other than Garantano starting the season because you missed all of spring. This is going to look different. I mean, look, this staff has yet to see Harrison Bailey in a scrimmage setting at the college level.
Right.
And so, I know everybody's fired up about the five-star, and I'm not saying he can't play because I don't have any idea. I mean, he should be able to. He's highly regarded. But he's a guy who, you know, did not get the opportunity to capitalize on being an early enrollee. And I think that has to set him back in terms of the competition. Where's their trust level with Brian Maurer? It wasn't very high at the end of the season, which is why he got pulled in the bowl game after just a couple of series. So I think right now it's JG's. If he doesn't play well, they'll make a change. They've already shown that they're not afraid to mix that up there. But I think it's going to start on JG.
No doubt about it. We're on with Brent Hubbs with VolQuest.com. Mark?
Brent, I was amused when I heard this. I'm pretty sure you did too. Over the years, Paul Feinbaum has called Philip Fulmer a lot of names that we can't use on the air. But what about his pronouncement that Fulmer saved the football program, you know, stepping in through that whole John Curry fiasco and really, saved the day by hiring Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, I mean, I think that's a hot take. You know, I mean, listen, I think what Jeremy Pruitt did with this team down the stretch last season was very good. I think Jeremy Pruitt's changing the culture in his program. I think they're improving their talent level. And I'm not knocking Jeremy Pruitt. He also lost to Georgia State and BYU last year.
Yes, he did.
So, I mean, to pronounce it saved, you know, but because of that is probably a stretch. Does it help the football program that a football guy is in charge of the athletic department who understands the challenges of Tennessee football? I would say yes, it does, but I think it's probably premature to declare Phillip as the savior to Tennessee football just yet. Now, you know, they go out and win 9 or 10 games this year. You probably make that pronouncement a little better, but you know, this is a program that was down 2 scores to Indiana with less than 4 minutes to play. They had to have a goal line stand against Kentucky to get bowl eligible. Now, that's not to say they didn't go out and earn it because they went out and got the job done, but I think we're a little premature in pronouncing something as saved and back or somebody as the savior of it.
Well said. Absolutely. We've seen around the country, Clemson, LSU, a lot of schools – shutting down even the workouts because their COVID numbers right now are alarmingly high. Why has it worked so well at Tennessee?
Well, I think Tennessee's players, a lot of people want to give credit to the administration. And I think, you know, they did a good job, you know, with early testing and everything when guys came back. But I think you got to give the players credit. You know, we hear stories at LSU and at Ole Miss that an outbreak occurred because, you know, the defensive back room was playing a poker game in somebody's apartment. You know, at Kansas State, they had an outbreak because a bunch of guys went to a guy's lake house for the weekend, and they all gathered, you know, closely. I think Tennessee's players have been smart enough to do that now, or to avoid that. Now, they're testing this week. It's hard to believe and hard to think that they would not have a positive somewhere along the way here with this next round of testing. I thought a significant notion that came out on social media last night, I don't remember who tweeted it out, to be honest with you, is the thought process in terms of testing doing what the PGA Tour is doing, and that is the repetitive testing, because the PGA Tour has dealt with some false negatives. And so, you know, they test a guy on Monday, and then all of a sudden he can't play in a tournament for 2 weeks, and the guy says, I have no symptoms. What the PGA Tour is doing is they're going to come back and test him the next couple, 3 days. If that person tests negative, then he can play on the weekend. That could be significant for football, for the NFL and for college football, because the idea has been if you test positive, then you're out that week and maybe you're out 2 weeks. But if it's a false positive, which we're seeing some of those out there apparently, and you retest somebody 3 days in a row and they don't have a, you know, they don't test positive, it's a negative test, then maybe they can play on Saturday. And so the idea of this forfeiture that people are throwing out there may, you know, may end up not being the case if we get to football. We'll see. I think Major League Soccer had to forfeit a game and sent Dallas home because they had a bunch of tests. So all pro teams, all sports teams are trying to figure out what to do today. And they're going to try to figure out what to do tomorrow based on new information. And it's going to be this way for the rest of the month. But to borrow the Tom Hanks line, you know, the earth's getting bigger in the window, meaning you're going to have to make a decision sooner rather than later. And I think come late July, into July, we're going to have some decisions. And, you know, here, you know, at the state level, we'll see what the TSSAA does here in another couple of hours when they meet and try to figure out what their fall is going to look like.
Mm. Have we hit the crazy period yet? With transfers, especially with no, you know, in-person visits?
You know, I think we've hit the period crazy from the standpoint of a lot of guys don't have a home, you know. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, too. If you take a grad transfer, you have room to take a grad transfer, or you take a transfer, he's got to count as one of your 25. Okay, well, let's say you take a grad transfer this fall to count as one of your 25 and you don't play football. Now you've given a scholarship away for your next recruiting class. So I think right now coaches are more in a whole pat situation with transfers and not taking guys right now. So I think you've got a bunch of guys in the portal who don't have a new home at this point in time, because I think all that's on hold as everybody waits to see what a football season looks or doesn't look like this fall or spring.
We're speaking to Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com.
Well, Brent, for me, I guess I only have one question here to finish up, and that is, if they don't play their first game, and that's UT, of course, since you're on VolQuest.com, and I think it's against Charlotte, if I could think of, what are the ramifications financially if they don't play that game? Will they still have to give them some sort of money with a canceled game, or is it because the season is delayed push back? What are, I guess, the contractual obligations for Tennessee and other schools that are in that same situation? Do you know?
Well, I think in most cases, and I don't know that specific game, but I know in a lot of cases, the way that contract's written is it's written is in there if there's an act of God,
right,
meaning we can't play the game because of a hurricane or something like that, then that contract is null and void. So you wouldn't owe them any money if you don't play the game. I know this, there was talk, and there has been some talk, about if you can't have fans in the stands, are schools going to pay? I think Georgia would owe ETSU $500,000 to play that game. Would they pay full on that with no fans in the stands because they're not going to get the money back on that, or would they just pay travel expenses? Well, if they just paid travel expenses, do those schools like ETSU and that level of school, do they want to play those games, get their kids beat up if they're not getting a big, you know, a big paycheck? Because that $500,000 is very important to their budget.
Yes.
And so they need games with fans in the stands, not just for them, you know, for their travel games against big name opponents, but also for their home season because they don't have those TV deals. So, again, you know, right now we can all speculate. Nobody's got the confidence about football this fall that they had 6 weeks ago. You know, maybe everybody's still holding that hope. I'm still holding that hope, but I don't think anybody in good conscience can say, yeah, I feel as confident about it as I did in the middle of June or the 1st of June. I don't see any way you can feel that way right now. So what the next 2 weeks look like, we don't know. We'll just have to wait and see and hope that it gets better for sports, hope that it gets better for, you know, universities who have to make critical decisions about bringing students back, and hopefully it gets better for everybody out there who is dealing with this right now.
Brent, great stuff as always. Good luck with the produce, and we'll speak to you next week, bud.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, buddy.
All right. Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com, working hard while doing this show. He can multitask like nobody's business. All right. Straight ahead. Guess who topped the list of earning the most money in NFL marketing and royalties? You might be surprised. 8:38 in the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Intergalactic. live on the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Mark Howard, along with Lane Bishop, our producer, Jonathan Schaefer. Kevin, off this week. Breaking news, guys. The NFL and the NFLPA have agreed on team facilities for training camp after going sort of back and, well, more from the player's side. Some frustration showed on the player's side as far as the protocols. There's going to be a three-tier approach to access to restricted areas. The agreement also allows teams to have up to two fan events at the stadium during training camp practice, as long as state and local requirements are followed as to the number of fans. It'll be interesting if they can adhere to strict physical distancing as far as the fans are concerned. Players must be at least 6 feet apart. That's going to be interesting in the facility at all times. Sauna and steam rooms will not be used during training camp. So it looks like they've got the parameters down, Blaine. There was nothing said about cutting back on the amount of preseason games. So it looks like we at least have somewhat of an idea of what we're in for training camp.
Yeah, too much. I haven't seen it yet, so I can't dissect it just based off what you told me. But I think these are things that are obvious. We want to get down to, okay, will there be preseason games? How will that be facilitated? Have they even announced that it's going to be less players on the roster during this time? And would they increase even more so the practice squad rosters? When is this date of reporting? I mean, I could just think of all kinds of things right off the top of my head right now that the things that I want to know, how they go about the semantics and maneuvering all that is great. We need to know that. But ultimately, it's the players that need to know that, and they have to feel comfortable with it. We're not going through that process with them. So I want to know the things that are outside of that, and I want to see what they're going to do and see how the players respond to that. And some guys may say it's a no-show. Some guys may say this is not enough, even with the things inside the facilities. You would hope that and think that they've had those kind of conversations already and they're already comfortable with it. But now the next step is going through it. When is that start date? Is it still the 28th July of this month, or has it been pushed back? If you're talking about no preseason games, I would think that your mindset is telling you that everything has been pushed back past the 28th. If it's not, then why are you pushing for no preseason games if you're reporting on the 28th?
More details to come for sure. All right, the other thing, the other question I posed in the tease, who topped the charts in NFL marketing and royalty numbers? And he's not an active player. It's Peyton Manning. He's number one. He earned $3,357 and change. And this comes, you know, mainly from video games, apparel, and trading cards. So essentially, the money comes in from the union, from Electronic Arts, who does Madden, Nike, Fanatics, who controls a lot of the apparel, and Panini trading cards. But does it surprise you that Peyton Manning is number one ahead of Tom Brady, who had just under $3
million? A little, but not really, because he's still a face. He does Peyton's Place. He does, the late night shows. He does a lot of commercials. How often do we see Tom Brady on commercials? He doesn't have Peyton's Place or his own little show.
Well, that
after
doesn't count commercials. This is just apparel.
Right. The reason why I bring that up, Mark, is because it brings about visibility.
Yeah.
Yes, you still see him, and so then, you know, that's why TV is the most powerful. So anytime you see somebody on TV, you think they're still relevant, they're still active, they're still involved, so everything else kind of follows and trickles down. No, I'm not really surprised. I mean, no. It's a little shocking that a current player like Tom Brady isn't number one. But you would say that Peyton Manning is a lot more popular, let's say, than Tom Brady. I would think, especially here in the South. In the South, what they love football. So they would probably a little more active than most. So not surprised. How about this? If Peyton Manning's not number one, he's number two. I expect nothing less. He can never stand for being number three. So anything if not, he moves on to the next man. And oh, by the way, I'm gonna just throw a thought out here. I have no connections to anybody. The people who own 40% of the Redskins are trying to sell, which I don't agree with, but I don't know the numbers and what's behind closed doors and what's going on because I see opportunity to make more money. But how about the Manning brothers? Oh, by the way, let's throw our father in there too. Starting to get a piece of the pie in ownership with the Redskins. If they did that, we talking about DC exploding. Man, talking about some positivity to the organization and bring instant credibility. What? Sounds like a decent idea, but you know, I'm just a guy here that just talks smack on the radio.
Yeah, it's interesting because yesterday you and Schaaf brought up a lot of good points about, you know, how a guy like Brady or even Peyton Manning, if you had signed him in the past, raises the value of your franchise. And, you see it reflected here. Patrick Mahomes, by the way, is number three on that list at $2.7 million. Then Dak Prescott at about $2.5 million. Saquon Barkley at about $2.3 million. Juju Smith-Schuster, $2.2 million. Kyler Murray, number seven, at $1.8 million. Aaron Rodgers. Surprised he's this far down, $1.4 million. You'd expect a guy like that who's a lock Hall of Famer and a quarterback, for that matter, with a Super Bowl win at $1.4 million. Todd Gurley is number nine at $1.25 million. Baker Mayfield is 10th at $1.1 million. And Ezekiel Elliott at right about $1 million is 11th. So
I have my reasonings for why Aaron Rodgers is there. Small market, and then people are snowed in and they can't get to the store.
Packer fans are rabidly loyal, so I'm surprised.
Yeah, that is a little more shocking. No doubt about it. But I put Aaron Rodgers on a whole another level, I think, because of his ability, but he's still only gotten one Super Bowl. So then maybe that has something to do with it. I have no idea. But Aaron Rodgers.
You still get royalty checks?
Yeah, right. I think I got mine the other day. It said $6.04.
Don't spend it all in one place.
So there's my value.
Okay, I can buy that.
Yeah. Hey.
All right, straight ahead, Dennis Dodd, talking college football and more. 8:54 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone.